The Count picked up the horseman in the sight and led off just a touch, a hair's breadth. For the Mannlicher was a high-velocity rifle, and the range was not more than 100 meters. He saw the hit clearly. The man lurched in the saddle and sprawled forward over the horse's neck, but he did not fall. The rifle dropped from his hands and cartwheeled across the earth, but the man clung desperately to the horse's mane while quick crimson spread across the shoulder of his dirty white robe. The Count fired again, aiming for the junction of the horse's neck and shoulder, and saw the jarring impact spin the animal off its feet, so that it fell heavily upon its wounded rider, crushing the air from his lungs in a short, high wail. The Count laughed, wild with excitement.
"How many, Gino? How many is that?"
8, my colonel.
"Keep counting, keep counting," he urged,
as he swung the rifle, seeking the next target, peering eagerly over the open V-sight. Then suddenly he froze, the rifle barrel wavering and sinking to point at his glossy toe caps. His lower jaw unhinged and slowly sank, as if in sympathy with the rifle barrel. His recent affliction, forgotten in the excitement of the chase, returned suddenly with a force that turned his bowels to water and his legs to rubber.
"Merciful Mary," he whispered.
The entire horizon was moving, an unbroken line from one edge of his vision to the other. It took him many seconds to assimilate what he was seeing, to realize that instead of 15 horsemen, there were suddenly thousands upon thousands, and that rather than running before him, they were now moving towards him at a velocity which he would not have believed possible. As he stared, he saw rank upon rank of the enemy, seemingly rising from the very earth ahead of him and rushing towards him through a curtain of fine pale dust. He saw the lowering sun glint red as blood upon the naked blades, and the drumming of galloping hooves sounded like the thunder of a giant waterfall. Yet faintly through the thunder, he heard the blood-freezing war shrieks of the horsemen.
"Giuseppe," he gasped, "take us away from here, fast, very fast."
This was the sort of appeal that went directly to the driver's heart. He spun the big car so nimbly that the Count's considerably weakened legs collapsed, and he fell backwards onto the leather seat. Spread over a front of a quarter of a mile behind and on each side of the rolls came 30 of the dun-coloured Fiat troop carriers. Despite their most fervent efforts, they'd lost ground steadily to the thrusting rolls, and they now lumbered along, almost 1,000 yards behind. However, the excitement of the chase had affected the occupants, and they'd climbed up onto the cabs and cupolas, and hung there, hooting and yelling as they watched the sport, like runners at a fox hunt. This solid phalanx of vehicles, advancing almost wheel to wheel over the rough ground at a speed which would have horrified the manufacturers, was suddenly faced with the urgent necessity of reversing its headlong career without any loss of speed. The drivers of the two leading trucks, whose need was most critical, solved the problem by spinning the wheels to hard lock, one left and the other right, and they came together, radiator to radiator, at a combined speed in excess of 60 miles per hour. In a roaring cloud of steam, splintering glass and rending metal, their cargoes of black-shirted infantrymen were scattered like wheat upon the earth, or impaled on various metal projections of the vehicle bodies. The trucks, inextricably locked into each other, settled slowly on their shattered suspensions, and no sooner had the dust begun to drift away than there was a belly-shaking thump as the contents of their shattered fuel tanks ignited in a tall volcanic spout of flame and black smoke. The other vehicles managed to reverse their courses without serious collision and streamed away into their own dust clouds, pursued by a horde of galloping, gibbering cavalry. Count Aldo Belli could not bring himself to glance back over his shoulder, certain that he would find a razor-edged sword swishing inches from his cringing rear, and he leaned over his driver, spurring him to greater speed by beating on his unprotected head and shoulders with a fist clenched like a hammer.
"Faster!"
shouted the Count, his fine baritone rising to an uncertain contralto.
"Faster, you idiot, or I will have you shot!"
And he hit the driver again behind one ear, experiencing a small spark of relief as the rolls overtook the rear vehicles in the disordered herd of fleeing trucks. Now, at last, he judged it safe to look back, and his relief was more intense when he realized that the Rolls was easily capable of outrunning a mounted man. He experienced a warm flood of returning courage.
"My rifle, Gino!" he shouted. "Give me my rifle!"
But the sergeant was trying to focus his camera on the pursuing horde, and the Count hit him a blow over the top of his head.
"Idiot! This is war!" he bellowed. "And I am a warrior! Give me my rifle!"
Giuseppe, the driver, hearing him, reluctantly decided that he was expected to slow the Rolls to give the Count an opportunity to follow his warlike intentions. But at the first diminution of speed, he received another lusty crack on the centre of his pate, and the Count's voice went shrill again.
"Idiot!" he screeched. "Do you want to get us killed? Faster, man, faster!"
And with unbounded relief, the driver pushed his foot flat on the throttle, and the Rolls leapt forward again. Gino was down on his hands and knees at the Count's feet, and now he came up with the Mannlicher in his hands and handed it to the Count.
"It is loaded, my Count."
"Brave boy."
The Count braced himself with the rifle, held at his hip, and looked about for something to shoot at. The Ethiopian cavalry had fallen well behind at this stage, and the Rolls had overtaken most of the troop carriers. They were between the Count and the enemy. The Count was considering ordering Giuseppe to work his way out onto the flank and thus give him an open field of fire, weighing the pleasure of shooting down the black riders at a respectable range against any possible physical danger to himself, and he turned on his precarious perch in the back seat to look out in that direction. He stared incredulously at what he saw. Two great humpbacked shapes were sailing in across the open grassland. They looked like two deformed camels, coming on swiftly with a curious loping progress that was at once comical and yet dreadfully menacing. The Count stared at them, uncomprehendingly, until, with a sudden jolt of shock and a new warm flood of adrenaline into his bloodstream, he realized that the two strange vehicles were moving fast enough and at such an angle as to cut off his retreat.
"Giuseppe!"
he shrieked, and hit the driver with the butt of the Mannlicher. It was not a heavy blow. It was meant only to attract his attention, but Giuseppe had already taken much punishment and was by now slightly concussed. He clung to the wheel with white knuckles and roared on directly into the path of the new enemy.
"Giuseppe!"
shrieked the Count again, as he suddenly recognized the gaily coloured flashes on the turret of the nearest machine, and at the same instant saw the thick, stubby, cylindrical shape that protruded ahead of him. It was fluted vertically, and at the far end a short, pipe-like muzzle thrust out of the heavy water jacket.
"Oh, merciful Mother of God!"
he howled, as the machine altered course slightly, and the muzzle of the Vickers machine gun pointed directly at him.
"You fool!"
he shrieked at Giuseppe, hitting him again.
"Turn, you idiot! Turn!"
Suddenly, through the tears of pain, the singing in his ears, and the blinding terror that gripped him, Giuseppe saw the huge camel-like shape looming up ahead of him, and he spun the wheel again, just as the muzzle of the Vickers erupted in a fluttering pillar of bright flame, and the air all around them was torn by the hiss and crack of 1,000 bullwhips. Major Castellani stood on the cab of his truck and peered disapprovingly through his binoculars into the distant clouds of rolling dust, where confused movement and shadowy, indistinguishable shapes flitted without seeming purpose or pattern. It had required all of his presence and authority to restrain the 10 trucks which carried the artillerymen and towed their field pieces, to keep them under his personal command, and to prevent them joining in the wildly enthusiastic rush after the small contingent of Ethiopian horsemen. Castellani was about to give the order to mount up and cautiously follow the Count's charge into history and glory, when he raised the binoculars again, and it seemed that the pattern of dust-obscured movement out there had altered. Suddenly, he saw the unmistakable shape of a Fiat transport emerge from the dust bank and move ponderously back towards him. Through the glasses, the men who clung to the canvas roof were all staring back in the direction from which they were coming at speed. He panned the glasses slowly and saw another truck lumber out of the dust mist, headed back towards him. One of the soldiers on its roof was aiming and firing his rifle back, into the obscuring clouds, and his comrades, clinging to the roof about him, were frozen in attitudes of trepidation and alarm. At that moment, Castellani heard something which he recognized instantly, his skin prickling at the distant ripping, tearing sound, the sound of a British Vickers machine gun. His eyes sought the direction, turning swiftly to the right flank of the extended Italian column, which seemed now to be rushing back towards him in confused and completely disordered retreat. He picked up the tall, humpbacked shape instantly, standing high on the open plain, coming in fast, with the strange bounding motion of a rocking horse, cutting boldly into the flank of the mass of soft-skinned Italian transports.
"Unlimber the guns!" shouted Castellani. "Prepare to receive enemy armor."
The Vickers machine guns and the turrets of the two armoured cars had ball-type mountings. The barrels could be elevated or depressed, but they could not traverse more than 10 degrees to left or right, this being the limit of the ball mounting's turn. The driver had of necessity to act as gun layer, swinging the entire vehicle to aim the gun, or at least bring it within the limited traverse of the mountain. The Russ found this frustrating beyond all enduring. He would select a target and shout in perfectly clear and coherent Amharic to his driver, Gareth Swales, not understanding a word of it, had already selected another target and was doing his best to line up on it, while the Russ delivered a series of wild kicks at his kidneys to register his royal right of refusing to engage it. The consequence of this was that the hump wove a crazy, unpredictable course through the Italian column, spinning off at sudden tangents as the two crew members shouted bitter recriminations at each other, almost ignoring the sheets of rifle fire that thundered upon the steel hull from point-blank range, like hail on a galvanized roof. Priscilla the pig, on the other hand, was doing deadly execution. She'd missed her first burst, fired at the speeding rolls, and it had ducked away behind the screen of dust and bucking trucks. Now, however, Jake and Gregorius were working with all the precision and mutual understanding that had developed between them.
"Left, driver, left, left," called Gregorius,
peering down the open sights of the Vickers at the truck that roared and bounced along 100 yards ahead of them.
"All right, I'm on him," shouted Jake,
as the vehicle appeared in the narrow field of his visor. This was a perforated steel plate that allowed only forward vision. But once Jake had the truck centered, he followed its violent efforts to dislodge him, closing in rapidly until he was 20 yards behind it. The back of the truck was packed with black-shirted infantrymen. Some of them were directing wild but rapid rifle fire at the pursuing car, the bullets clanging and whining off the hull. But most of them clung white-faced to the sides of the truck and stared back with stricken eyes as the armored death carrier bore down inexorably upon them.
"Shoot, Greg," called Jake.
Even through the cold anger that gripped him, he was pleased that the boy had obeyed his orders and held his fire until this moment. There'd be no wastage now. At so short a range, every round ripped into the Italian truck, tearing through the canvas, flesh, bone and steel at the rate of 700 rounds a minute. The truck swerved violently and its front end collapsed. It went over broadside, crashing over and over, flinging the men high in the air, the way a spaniel throws off the droplets from its back as it leaps from water to land.
"Driver, right," called Gregorius immediately. "Another truck, right, a little more. That's it. You're on."
And they roared in pursuit of another panic-stricken load of Italians. 100 yards away, on their flank, the hump scored its first success. Gareth Swales was no longer able to accept the indignity of the Rouse's flying feet and his frenzied and completely unintelligible commands. He left the controls of the racing car to swing an angry punch at the Rouse.
"Cut that out, old chap," he snapped. "Play the game. I'm on your side, damn it."
The car, no longer under control, jinked suddenly. Almost side by side with them, sped a Fiat truck filled with Italians. And the driver had not yet realized that there was another enemy, apart from the pursuing hordes of Ethiopian horsemen. His head was twisted around over his shoulder at an impossible angle, and he drove by instinct alone. The two uncontrolled vehicles came together at an acute angle, and at the top of their combined speeds. Steel met steel in a storm of sparks, and they staggered away from the blow, both of them veering over steeply. For a moment it seemed that the hump would go over. She teetered at the extreme end of her centre of gravity, and then came back on to all four wheels, with a crash that threw the men inside her unmercifully against her steel sides, before racing on again, with Gareth wrestling at the wheel for control. The Fiat truck was lighter and stood higher. The armoured car had caught her neatly under the cab, and she did not even waver, but flipped over on her back, all four wheels still spinning as they pointed at the sky. And the cab and canvas-covered hood were torn away instantly, the men beneath them smeared between steel and hard earth. It was all too much for the Ras. He could no longer contain his frustration at being enclosed in a hot metal box from which he could see almost nothing, while all around hundreds of his hated enemies were escaping with complete impunity. He flung open the hatch of the turret and stuck out his head and shoulders, yipping shrilly with bloodlust, frustration, anger and excitement. At that moment, an open sky-blue and glistening black Rolls Tourer flashed across the front of the hump. In the rear seat was an Italian officer, bedecked with the glittering insignia of rank. Instantly, Gareth Swales and the Ras were in perfect accord once again. They'd found a target eminently acceptable to both of them.
"I say, tally-ho!" cried Gareth,
to be answered by a blood-curdling,
"How do you do?"
like the crowing of an enraged rooster from the turret above him. Count Aldo Belli was in hysterics, but the drivers seemed to have lost all sense of direction. Now, more than just a little concussed, he turned at right angles across the line of flight of the Italian column. This was as hazardous as running an ocean liner at full speed through a field of icebergs, for the rolling dust clouds had reduced visibility to less than 50 feet. And out of this brown fog, the lumbering troop carriers appeared without warning, the drivers in no fit condition to take evasive action, all looking back over their shoulders. Ahead of them, two more monstrous shapes appeared out of the dust. One was an Italian truck, and the other was one of the cumbersome camel-backed vehicles with the Ethiopian colours splashed upon its hull and a Vickers machine gun protruding from its turret. Suddenly, the armoured car swerved and crashed heavily into the side of the truck, capsizing it instantly and then swerving back towards the Rolls. It came so close, towering over them so threateningly, that it entered even Giuseppe's limited field of vision. The effect was miraculous. Giuseppe shot bolt upright in his seat and, with the touch of an inspired nuvolari, brought the Rolls round on two wheels, cutting finely across the armoured bows just at the moment that the hatch of the turret flew open and a wizened brown face, filled with the largest, whitest and most flashing teeth the Count had ever seen, popped out of the turret and emitted a war cry so shrill and heart-chilling that the Count's bowels flopped over like a stranded fish. As the barrel of the Vickers swung onto the Rolls, the Ethiopian gunner ducked down into the turret, and the barrel elevated slightly until the Count found himself staring stupidly into its dark round aperture. But Giuseppe had been watching, also in the driving mirror, and now he spun the wheel, and the Rolls flashed aside like a mackerel before the driving charge of the Barracuda. The blast of shot from the Vickers tore down its left side, lifting a storm of dirt and pebbles in spurting fountains high into the air. The armoured car swung heavily to follow the Rolls' manoeuvre, the leaping dust fountains swinging with it, closing in mercilessly. However, Giuseppe, faced with the prospect of death, hit the brakes so hard that the Count was catapulted forward, howling protests, to hang over the front seat, his ample black-clad buttocks pointing at the heavens and his glistening boots kicking wildly as he fought for balance. The sheet of bullets from the swinging Vickers passed mere inches ahead of the Rolls, and Giuseppe swung the wheel to hard opposite lock, released the brakes, and trampled hard on the throttle. The Rolls kicked over hard, wheels spinning for purchase, then bounded ahead with such impetus that the Count was thrown backwards again, crashing into a sitting position on the rear leather seat, his helmet falling over his eyes.
"I'll have you shot," he gasped,
as he struggled weakly to adjust the helmet. Giuseppe was too busy to hear him. His duck and swerve had beaten the Ethiopian gunner, and the superior speed of the Rolls was carrying it swiftly out of harm's way. Just a few more seconds. Then the ancient but splendidly toothed head of the gunner appeared once more in the turret. And the bows of the armoured car and the questing muzzle of the Vickers swung back. The gunner dropped back behind the gun, and the roaring chatter of bullets sounded high above the bellow of straining engines. Once again, the dust storm of bullets tore up the earth, swinging rapidly towards the Rolls. Slightly ahead of the two vehicles, another growling, labouring troop carrier loomed out of the dust on a parallel course with them, but travelling at only half the speed under its heavy load of terrified troopers. Giuseppe touched the wheel, swaying out slightly away from the stream of bullets. Then he swung hard the opposite way, and as the armoured car turned to follow him, he ducked neatly behind the troop carrier, screened by its high, unstable bulk from the deadly machine gun. The Ethiopian kept firing. As the solid hose of fire tore through the canvas hood of the truck, ripping and shredding the men crowded shoulder to shoulder beneath it, the Rolls was pulling away swiftly in its lee. Suddenly, it was out of the dust clouds into the crystal desert air, with a vista of open land stretching away to the horizon. A horizon which was the passionate destination of every man in the Rolls. The lumbering troop carriers were left behind, and the Rolls could make a clean run of it. The way the Count felt at that moment, they would only stop once he was safely in his defensive positions above the wells of Chaldee. Then, quite suddenly, he was aware of the guns on the open plain ahead of him. They were drawn up neatly in spaced-out triangular batteries, three Vs of three guns each, with the gunners grouped about them, and the long, fat barrels covering the approaching mass of fleeing vehicles. There was a parade-ground feeling of calm and good order about them that made the Count blubber with relief after a nightmare from which he'd just emerged.
"Giuseppe, you have saved us," he sobbed. "I'm going to give you a medal."
The threat of capital punishment, made a few minutes earlier, was forgotten.
"Drive for the guns, my brave boy. You have done good work, and you'll find me grateful."
At that moment, emboldened by talk of safety, Gino lifted himself from the floorboards where he'd been resting these last few minutes. He looked cautiously over the rear of the Rolls, and what he saw caused him to let out a single strangled cry and to drop once more into his original position on the floor. Behind them, the Ethiopian armoured car had burst out of the dust clouds and was bounding determinedly after them. The Count took one look also, and immediately resumed his encouragement of Giuseppe, beating on his head with a fist like a judge's gavel.
"Faster, Giuseppe," he shrieked. "If he kills us, I'll have you shot."
And the Rolls raced for the protection of the guns. "Steady now," intoned Major Castellani gravely, trying by the tone of his voice to quiet their nerves. "Steady, my lads. Hold your fire. Hold your fire. Remember your drill," he said. "Just remember your range drill, soldier." He paused a moment beside the nearest gun layer, lifting his binoculars and sweeping the field ahead. The dust cloud was rolling rapidly towards them, but all the action was confused and indistinct. "You are loaded with high explosive?" the major asked quietly, and the gun layer gulped nervously and nodded. "Remember, the first shot is the only one you can aim with care. Make the count."
"Sir,"
the man's voice was unsteady, and Castellani felt a stab of anger and contempt. They were all unblooded boys, unsteady and nervous. He'd been forced to push them to their places and put the trails of the guns in their hands. He turned abruptly and strode to the next battery.
"Steady now, lads. Hold your fire until it counts."
They turned, strained, pale faces to him. One of the layers looked as though he'd burst into tears at any moment.
"The only thing you had to be afraid of is me," growled Castellani. "Let one of you open fire before I give the order, and you'll..."
A cry interrupted him. as one of the loaders stood up and pointed out onto the field. "Take that man's name," snapped Castellani, and turned with dignity, making a show of polishing the lens of his binoculars on his sleeve before raising them to his eyes. Colonel Count Aldo Belli was leading his men back so enthusiastically that he'd outstripped them by half a mile, and every moment was widening the gap. He was driving directly at the centre of the artillery batteries, and he was standing, tall, in the back seat of the Rolls, with both arms waving and gesticulating as though he was being attacked by a swarm of bees. Even as Castellani watched, from out of the brown curtains of dust beyond the Rolls burst a machine that he recognised instantly, despite its new camouflage paint and the unfamiliar weapon in the turret. It did not need the gay pennant that flew above it to identify his enemy. "Very well, lads," he said quietly. "Here they come. High explosive, and wait for the order. Not a moment before." The speeding armored car fired. A long, tearing, ripping burst. Much too long, Castellani thought with grim satisfaction. That gun would be overheating. They could expect a jam. An experienced gunner laid down short. Spaced bursts of fire. The enemy were green also, Castellani decided. "Steady, lads," he snapped, watching his men stir restlessly as the sound of gunfire and exchanged nervous glances. The car fired again, and he saw the fall of shot around the rolls, kicking up swift jumping spurts of dust and earth. Another long ripping hail of fire that ended abruptly and was not repeated. "Ha!" snorted Castellani with satisfaction. "She has jammed." His wavering gunners would not have to receive fire. It was good. It would steel them, give them confidence to shoot without being shot at. "Steady now. All steady. Not long to wait. Nice and steady now." His voice lost its jagged, emery paper tone and became soothing and crooning like a mother at the cradle. "Wait for it, lads. Easy now." The RAS did not understand what had happened, why the gun remained silent, despite all the strength of both his hands on pistol grip and triggers. The long canvas belt of ammunition still drooped from the bins and fed into the breech of the Vickers, but it no longer moved. The RAS swore at the gun, such an oath that, had he hurled it at another man, would have led immediately to a duel to the death. But the gun remained silent. Armed with his two-handed battle sword, the RAS climbed half out of the turret and brandished it about his head. It is doubtful if he would have realized what three batteries of modern 100mm field guns would have looked like from the business end, or if he had recognized them, whether they would have daunted his determined pursuit of the fleeing Rolls. As it was, his reason and vision were clouded with the red mists of battle rage. He did not see the waiting guns. Below him, Gareth Swales leaned forward in the driver's seat, peering short-sightedly through the visor, which narrowed his field of vision and partially obscured it, as though he was looking through the perforated bottom of a kitchen colander. His eyes were swimming from the cordite smoke, the engine fumes and the dust motes, so that he blinked rapidly as he concentrated all his efforts in following the speeding ethereal shape of the Rolls. He did not see the waiting guns. "Shoot, damn you!" he shouted. "We're going to lose them!" But above him, the Vickers was silent, and from his seat, low down in the hull, the slight fold of ground so carefully chosen by Major Castellani half hid the batteries. He raced towards them, drawn on inexorably by the fleeting shape of the Rolls dancing elusively ahead of him. "Good!" Castellani allowed himself a bleak little smile as he watched the enemy vehicle come on steadily. Already it was within comfortable range for an experienced gunner, but he knew it must be half as close again before his own crews could make any certainty of their practice. The Rolls, however, was a mere 200 meters in front of the guns, and coming on at a speed that could not have been less than 60 miles an hour. Three terrified and chalky faces were turned towards him in dreadful appeal, and three voices were raised in loud cries for succor. The Major ignored them, and swiftly turned his professional eye back to the enemy. He found it was still 2,000 meters out across the plain, but closing satisfactorily. He was on the point of uttering another reassurance to his edgy gunners when the rolls roared through the narrow gap in the center of his batteries.